Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Now, before the break in the last hour, I mentioned this story that was in the Post-Dispatch a couple of days ago. And unfortunately, look, I want to root for the city of St. Louis, and I'm fine with a revitalization and spending money to, you know, make the dome not such a pile and a heap of you-know-what. And getting a development at the AT&T building, albeit without taxpayer money. But the story that was out on Monday talks about, you know, I guess really there's no optimism, I don't think, and we're going to address this with Jeff Rainford in just a little bit here later this hour, on whether or not the population and the region can recover from what's happened. The headline of the story was, "We are in trouble. St. Louis region's slowing population growth spurs a call for action." So this was the topic of a dinner that I had recently with Jeff Rainford, who is former Mayor Slay's chief of staff. And we were talking with someone who is in economic development, and Rex Singfield, who I dine with about four times a year, was there. And we were talking about the stagnant population and how it's a problem, because you just simply can't have, you think about young people. Ethan Hannaford, my producer, one of my producers, a young person. Young people have to want to move to St. Louis. They want to have to stay in St. Louis. And they're trying to do something about it. But I'm just going to tell you, it's a big, big hurdle. And when the population keeps going down and down and down, how does the city recover? There's a guy who is described as a veteran public policy executive who's working on this new effort. And we'll kind of talk about the effort at 5:30, saying, "We're in trouble. We don't recognize we're in trouble, but we're in trouble. Look, I recognize that we're in trouble." And this is important not only from a downtown St. Louis situation, but it really is important from a region, from a regional situation. So we're going to share some thoughts on that. Plus, we have audio cut of the day coming up as well. Let's talk a little bit about Iran and everything that's happening there. Jerry Baker from The Wall Street Journal back with us this afternoon. It's been a bit. Jerry, how are you?
Hello, Mark. Thanks very much for having me.
I like the way, in your most recent piece, you kind of broke it down in a way that, people want to put labels on a lot of this stuff, like neocons or restrainers. And your point is, making choices like that is probably not a good idea when things are complicated in this situation and others, right?
Yeah, I think that's right, Mark. I was trying to, sort of dig into this debate that apparently is going on within Republican circles, within MAGA circles in particular, between the so-called restrainers, those who think, with some justification, actually, I should say, that Donald Trump was elected and has been successful in large part by staying out of messy foreign wars, which the United States has unfortunately got itself into in the last 20 years. And I say that's been the key to success. And those who think of a more traditional Republican stance, you can call them maybe neocons. That's a slightly overused term, but those who think, no, the U.S. should be intervening, robustly. It's the most powerful nation on earth, and it should intervene in all kinds of ways. I think it's a false debate. I think it's a false dichotomy between those two. And I think particularly in this case, or let me put it another way, that I think what Trump did in striking the nuclear facility at Fordo in Iran was entirely consistent with his broadly kind of hands-off approach that he's followed both in his first term and in the first 6 months of his second term, because it's not true that Donald Trump has not deployed military action in the past, as we know he did during the first term, most famously and successfully in eliminating that Iranian military leader, Qasem Soleimani, and a couple of other targeted strikes too. So he's demonstrated a willingness to use force, but as long as it's got a very clear objective, as long as it's very targeted, as long as it doesn't involve a kind of long-term, open-ended commitment of the United States to objectives, frankly, like regime change and things like that, that might not be achievable. So I think what he's done is, you know, is consistent with what he's done all along. It's neither neocon nor is it restrainer. I just think in the end it was a thanks, I should say, also to the extraordinary work that the Israeli military's done over the last year and a half in basically, you know, eroding organizations like Hamas and Hezbollah and ultimately Iran's defenses. It was a golden opportunity, really, a tremendous opportunity for the United States to really go in and pursue its own objectives, which is certainly to stop Iran from getting a nuclear bomb. And I think it just, you know, as I said, it was a measured and judicious action by a president who, you know, sometimes when it comes to some policies, doesn't always act in a measured and judicious way. But I think when it comes to foreign policy, I think on the whole, he has.
And by the way, I mean, he kind of made it clear that this would happen, right? It's not like he didn't talk about this, that there wasn't a timetable involved, and that he stuck to that timetable and then acted. So it couldn't have been like, it's not like it came out of nowhere. I mean, this president promises things. Maybe not all the promises are kept, but in this case, he said what he was going to do, and he did it.
Yeah, look, and I do think, look, we've been talking about the Iranian nuclear program literally for 20 years.
Yes.
George W. Bush and even Bill Clinton talked about it, but we've known about that there's been a clear commitment and indeed facilities for a nuclear program in Iran since Bush was president. And Bush talked about, you know, Bush pursued diplomatic efforts to try and get them to back off it. Obama very famously did and signed a deal with the Europeans and others too to try and get them to back off it. That didn't turn out very successfully. Trump, you know, essentially took a kind of a hands-off approach and pulled us out of that deal in his first term. And then Biden once again tried diplomatic measures. And I think Trump, you know, I think the direct approach of just bombing the place and actually, you know, again, we'll have to see what these competing intelligence assessments finally say, but they've clearly done enormous damage to it. And being able to do that, given, as I say, the damage that Israel has already done to Iran's capability to respond, that just seems to me to be, it's a direct, the kind of direct, robust, but very limited. And it's very striking to me, Mark, that, you know, the president now keeps saying, basically, that's it. It's all done,
yeah.
One and done, we're done, the war's over, 12 days, it's all over. That all of that seems to me to be completely consistent with the way President Trump has conducted basically most of his foreign policy over the last 10 years.
I was going to talk about this yesterday, and the last 2 days, time got away from me. But did you see the tweet from Marjorie Taylor Greene on this a couple of days ago?
Which one? Because there've been quite a few.
What she said, and I think these were initial thoughts on bombing Iran, and she said, "I don't know anyone in America who's been the victim of a crime killed by Iran, but I know many people have been victims of crimes, you know, committed by criminal aliens." She goes on to say, "Neocon," you know, she uses these words, "neocon warmongers beat their drums of war and act like Billy Badasses going to war in countries most Americans have never seen and can't find on a map, but never find the courage to go to war against the actual terrorists who actually do kill Americans, invade our land and make billions doing it day after day, year after year." She's talking about, you know, some of the fentanyl that comes in, et cetera. Now, I understand her point in that tweet. She goes on to say, look, I want to fund American interests and issues. She's on the Doge committee. I can agree with a lot of what she says in here. But again, she kind of goes back to sort of, I think, simplifying this in a way that you addressed in your piece, because she's trying to stand out there. And I don't know if we'd tag her as an isolationist, but there are people like, you know, her and maybe Tom Massey and others on the Republican side, maybe not many, that think, you know, this is not the right thing to do at this time. And I think that's simplifying and not looking at the bigger picture. And as you indicated, you know, we've been trying to do this for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. Look, and again, that's another false choice. The idea that we have to choose between going after illegal immigrants in this country and particularly, especially initially, those who commit crimes, going after everybody who commits crimes in this country, which is the first responsibility of any government, is to ensure that there is, you know, law and order. But the idea that we can only do that and we can't look after our own national security interests at the same time,
yeah.
You know, most people are capable of walking and chewing gum at the same time. We can do the two things. And I particularly objected in that ex post by her that she's not concerned that Iranians, you know, are killing Americans, whereas many illegal immigrants and others are doing so. Because actually, of course, many Americans have died at the hands of Iranians in the last 20 years. We lost a large number to Iranian-backed, funded, and sometimes even operated activities against our forces in Iraq, and to some extent also in Afghanistan, and also some of our forces in Syria from time to time been attacked by them. We've lost, you know, Iran's support for Hezbollah and Hamas has been used against Americans in the past. Actually, I mean, you know, by some estimates, thousands of Americans have been killed by the Iranian regime over the last 20 or 30 years. So the idea that that isn't a threat to us, that we need to take seriously, and especially when that enemy of ours, which is sworn to destroy the country and describes us as the great Satan and wants to, you know, basically kill every American if they can on the earth, and that country wants to get a nuclear weapon, it makes total sense to me that we should, you know, as well as going after domestic criminals and people who commit crimes against Americans here in the homeland, that we should go after people with very, very powerful weapons who say they want to wipe our country off the face of the earth.
Jerry Baker is here from The Wall Street Journal. No doubt you've probably seen the reaction this morning from Pete Hegseth and President Trump on the CNN report. And I guess the New York Times got involved in this, saying that sources say that they did not destroy the core components of the nuclear program and likely set it back only by months, which that seems an interesting. I've heard anything from months to, you know, 3 years to 30 years. But thoughts on that, because, you know, this is where this trust of the media comes into play. And that's why President Trump popped off on this earlier today. I played some audio earlier in the show. I might follow up with you here in the aftermath of our interview addressing that again. And I have audio cut of the day. The audience knows I feature that at 5:50. But, you know, they're so quick. I even mentioned this, Jerry, the other day. I had to watch CNN on Saturday night because I just wanted to see how they would cover it. And it was awkward. They didn't know how to cover it. But man, when they get a source that they think says that something's not successful for the U.S. military or President Trump, they jump on that pretty quickly, don't they?
Yeah, it was a little, exactly as you say, it was a little grating. And by the way, who else did repeated the same story? That was the New York Times, of course, yesterday, who reported the same, you know, unidentified anonymous sources at the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, quoting these. Look, it's no accident that people have no trust in many of these media institutions. These are the same media institutions that told us that Donald Trump was a Russian agent, and that, you know, the U.S. government had been taken over essentially by a foreign power, something that we learned, of course, very quickly was absolutely untrue and completely bogus. So, you know, I completely understand the skepticism that people have about this. Early estimate. Look, it's going to take time. Everybody knows. I'm not an expert in these things, but you know, when you drop bombs,
it's going to take a while to
assess on a target thousands of miles away, especially on a target that is buried hundreds of meters underground. You know, we don't have fantastic on the ground intelligence there. We have some, and I think Israel does too. It's going to take some time to get an assessment of it. So I think. But you know, my particular problem with the way that was reported yesterday was, you know, I think they put the most sort of negative possible gloss on the report. I went in and read more of the report in detail, or read more of the reporting of the report as it were in detail, and the report was highly, highly tentative and conditional. It said low confidence that we have in knowing this. It gave a range of possible outcomes, and Trump mentioned this at his press conference this morning too. You know, that there was, you know, the lowest outcome, the worst, if you like, possible outcome was we've only set this back a few months, but there could be other outcomes where it could be worse than that. So it was very striking that the media, so many of the CNN and the New York Times in particular, were so keen to go to the very, very, the most unhelpful, the most damaging part of this report, while actually ignoring the fact that the report itself was extremely uncertain, extremely conditional in terms of its own assessment.
It's not an illegitimate question. And the only hesitation I've had in, you know, basically saying this is complete obliteration is because I think there are some questions about whether or not they moved some of the uranium and, you know, whether there were ways to, you know, to hide some of this and then recreate this program rather quickly. But on the other hand, to your point, there's still a lot that we don't know. And the instinct on my part has been, you know, certainly in the last 7 or 8 years since 2016, is that these things usually come from people who are not fans of Trump and they're trying to do damage. So we'll have to see what the assessments say. Now, along those lines, Jerry Baker, I've been reading your comms. You're not a fan of everything that this president does, right? That's fair to say, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. I mean, we talked about it before, Mark. I think, you know, again, you know my views. I completely understand why people voted for Trump. American leadership has largely failed them over the last 20 years. We've had this woke, progressive, cultural, left-wing, ideological takeover of most of our institutions in the last 20 years, from everything from academia to the media to large parts of big business to the federal government. They want change, and Donald Trump represents that change. And I think, you know, and I was optimistic and remain optimistic that he can make many of those important changes. I also think that globalization, which is the kind of doctrine that has dominated so many of our leadership and institutions over the last 20 years or so, has also failed American people. And Donald Trump represents the most cogent and the most plausible alternative to globalization of any leader we've seen. But, you know, and so I say all of that in his defense and all of that and, you know, appreciating some of the good things that he's done. But, you know, I think some of the ways in which he goes about these things are not necessarily very productive. The most obvious, which I feel, and we've spoken about before, and doubtless will again, and I will write about again. I don't think that the chaotic and unpredictable way in which he's going about either sanctions, tariffs, or
yeah,
relations
right.
with our allies is very helpful. I think it's extremely damaging. America's, you know, America's the most powerful country on earth. We don't need the rationale behind the tariffs is frankly madness. I think there's plenty to be said for, you know, making other countries play by the rules when it comes to trade, but imposing these across-the-board tariffs was madness, damaging to the United States and damaging to our ability to get what we want done in the world. And I think the way he's treated our allies, whether it be Canada, whether it be, you know, many of the NATO allies, has also been very unhelpful. So, yeah, look, you take the rough with the smooth with Donald Trump.
I agree.
And I'm going to, you know, to mix metaphors, you call balls and strikes.
Right.
And, you know, that's I think my job as a journalist rather than to be a kind of a cheerleader.
I believe you. I agree with you because I've had hesitation. I've expressed hesitation on the tariffs in particular. And then you mentioned Canada. There's things that have happened even with that ally that have been very confusing to me, given the support that we have, you know, certainly from some of these other nations. So I'm with you on that. Hey, before I let you go, you want to say anything about maybe the next communist mayor of New York City?
Don't make up my mind. People can't seem to make up their mind whether we're going to face. I'm in New York City.
Yeah.
Whether we're going to face Marxism or Sharia law under the next the likely next mayor. Look, I mean, I think that Andrew Cuomo was a terrible candidate. Andrew Cuomo was governor of New York during COVID, and his decisions resulted in needless deaths. He resigned. He was then later forced to resign in scandal. And the idea that he was the sort of shoe-in, as the pundit class seemed to think he was, and the Democratic leadership seemed to think he was, for the Democratic nomination for mayor was always madness. And I think large numbers of people voted yesterday or in the last week or whenever they voted for this guy Mandani because they didn't want Andrew Cuomo. Now, unfortunately, yeah, they may find themselves stuck with a far left, anti-Zionist, pro-Palestinian mayor. But I think we'll see. We've got another 4 months till the general election itself. Normally the Democratic candidate, you know, is the strong favorite for that election. But there could be, you know, there could be a surprise this time. What's happened, I'll just finish with this, Mark, is that, because I know you've not got much time, is that, again, Andrew Cuomo was not popular. This guy, Mamdani, came from nowhere and was seen very quickly as the main alternative to Cuomo, and so a lot of people voted for him. But Mamdani's received very little scrutiny. Mamdani's received more scrutiny in the last 12 hours than he received in the previous 6 months. And so over the next 4 months, as we come to the general election, he's going to get a lot more scrutiny. And his views on Israel and his views on, you know, eliminating prisons and eliminating the police and establishing city-run grocery stores, God help us, you know, like the city-run DMV and all this kind of stuff. His ideas are going to get a lot more scrutiny. And I wonder, frankly, whether they're, you know, even in a far left crazy Democratic city like the one I live in whether they're really going to stand up to that kind of stuff.
Well, you would hope so, because that they wouldn't stand up, but you would hope that there's going to be some, you know, more of a microscope put. Look, from the middle of the country, we weren't following this very closely, and I, to your point, just kind of discovered a lot of the interesting details about this guy Mondani. But good luck with that. I mean, Andrew Cuomo's still talking about maybe running as an independent, so he's kind of out there thinking these false hopes that maybe in the shoes of Anthony Weiner, we can say. Remember Anthony Weiner? His name comes to mind in this moment. Yeah, exactly.
Who could forget? Yeah,
another great.
New York produces all these fantastic politicians, doesn't it?
Jerry, awesome to have you on again. I hope all is well and you're having a great summer.
Thanks.
All right,
you
take
too.
Care.
Thanks,
we'll
take
see you.
Bye-bye.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, his name is Zohran Mamdani, and most of us are just learning his name unless you lived in New York City, and he just won the Democrat primary for the mayor of the biggest city in America.
Tonight, we made history. We have won because New Yorkers have stood up for a city they can afford. And it's where the mayor will use their power to reject Donald Trump's fascism.
So that was kind of his thing, Donald Trump's fascism. Andrew Cuomo got into this race, you know, the former governor who embarrassed himself in the aftermath, certainly, of Cuomo. At first, when Cuomo gets in there, my understanding is he started talking about common sense things, Sue, like, you know, cleaning up the subways and the streets, not being partisan. But his team dropped that because this guy was caught catching fire, Mamdani. And he's 33 years old. He just got 43% of the first choice vote in a 9-candidate election in which more than 1 million New Yorkers participated in. By the way, that's the highest primary turnout in 36 years. I want to get into more of that in a second. But listen to this and tell me if this makes sense. I meant to ask Brian Kilmeade about this earlier. So it wasn't people of color that gave him the victory. If you look at Hispanic or Latino of any race, Mamdani got 30% of the vote. Andrew Cuomo got 50% of the vote. White or Caucasian, 35%, almost 36% for Mamdani. Andrew Cuomo got 25%. Black or African American, again, Cuomo gets 44% of the vote. Mamdani gets 20% of the vote. This is the one that throws me. I don't even have a theory on it, so I want to look into it. 16% of Asian people voted for Andrew Cuomo. 58% of Asian people voted for Mamdani. Now, I don't know what the vote totals were on the demographics, so that might play into this. Maybe it was a smaller population of Asians, and that's why the numbers are off. Other races, 40% for Andrew Cuomo,
Mark.
29% for Mamdani. So basically, it was the white people who put him in this position.
A city-run grocery store man is talking about?
Okay, listen to all of it.
Our police force should not be assisting ICE.
Defund the NYPD and refund
all of these different social services.
I will create a network of city-owned grocery stores. It's like a public option for produce.
I'll freeze the rent for millions of tenants, make buses fast and free, and deliver universal childcare. And before you ask, I'll pay for it by taxing the rich.
The mayor will use their power to reject Donald Trump's fascism.
So John Podoretz over at commentary.org, he's a pundit who's been around for a long time, broke this down a little bit. And some of the stats here and the things that he points out are rather interesting. Next to Keith Ellison, who is in Minnesota, he's run for attorney general twice and won. He got more votes in the primary than any Muslim candidate has ever received in the U.S. And while John says he ran on affordability and did not make his anti-Israel obsession, which, by the way, is clear, it's centerpiece of his campaign, he didn't really do that. But he's running in the most Jewish city in America, and he's pretty anti-Semitic. He opened the student chapter for justice in Palestine at Bowdoin, which is one of the schools in New York City. So what Podoretz says is, to put it simply, and again, I'm catching up on this. We talked about this with Kilmeade. We talked about it with Jerry Baker. But this guy, I didn't know really much about it. We've been talking about Trump and all these other things, not the mayor of New York City, where Andrew Cuomo, I don't even think, was expected to win. But I don't think he was expected to lose by this much at this point. John says he won because of October 7th, which means he's the encampment candidate. He's the Free Palestine candidate. He is the globalize the infantata candidate. He emerged from the pack because that was his secret sauce. He's a foreign-born Muslim who rose from the ranks of the anti-Israel movement of the 2010s, laid the groundwork for the explosion of anti-Semitism in America over the past 20 months. He describes him as smart and articulate, able and impressive. He's also an implicit celebrator of anti-Jewish violence and anti-Semitic evil. He said he would have Bibi Netanyahu arrested if Bibi came to New York City. He didn't moderate his views or his positions as he ran for office because they were good for him financially and electorally. He raised a lot of money. The Bernie Bros. Again, these are the white young people who vaulted this guy into this position. Now, you remember who Curtis Sliwa was? You don't know his name, do you?
I don't know.
You do. Here's why. Okay. Remember in the 80s, they had this thing called the Guardian Angels.
Oh, that's right. Right? He ran that,
and he became very popular. He's also been a radio talk show host, but he's been a perennial candidate for mayor, and he's a Republican.
You need to be able to motivate people. Look, fault him as you will. You keep throwing stuff at him, you just strengthen him with millennials. We have to bring the millennials to us. Wasn't Trump able to do that with male millennials?
Yep.
And that probably was part of his pathway to victory. We have to start doing that now in New York City, and I'm the only one to do that.
He's not going to win. There's no way a Republican's going to win. So where you have Jamal Bowman in New York and Cori Bush right here in St. Louis kicked out of office because of their conduct for a variety of reasons. But look, a lot of it was because of the Jewish vote, because of their conduct after October 7th. Now in the most important election of this year, progressive white voters in New York City are showing they're on the march, and that's their standard bearer. This is a guy who is openly, as you heard in the cuts, wanting to defund the police. He wants to end incarceration.
Jeez.
He wants to put homeless beds in subway stations, right? Some of this stuff is nuts. He wants to end the gifted and talented programs in middle schools.
What?
He wants to kill the test that he took, a citywide test that is something that helped him get into school. So all of these things, and he doesn't care about attacks on Jews. If there are encampments at Columbia University or on other college campuses, he will root that on. This guy is super dangerous. Now, it looks like the only person who can stop him is Eric Adams, who is the current mayor, because he's running as an independent. He's going to get a lot more closer look under the microscope, but he is scary. You think Tashara Jones was scary in St. Louis? Good Lord. He's Tashara Jones and AOC on steroids.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide, or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball, the game's official home for games, is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We have audio cut of the day coming up here in just a few minutes. And yeah, Sue, you referred to the Cardinals and Cubs. It's a four-game series. So game three tonight, we're hoping you can win one more game. You win the series. It'd be awesome to have a sweep. Last night, the last few nights have been phenomenal. I get to watch the game tonight. I've been preoccupied. I had the swim meet on Monday, and I had a client dinner last night at Fleming's. I had a really good steak. It was awesome.
Yum.
But I'm going to pay attention to the game tonight for sure. So I saw this story in the Post on Monday, and it reminded me of a dinner conversation that I had with my next guest. The story said a growing number of civic and business groups are highlighting the metropolitan area's stagnant population as an urgent problem, and they're pushing the region's planning organization to do something about it. And they go on to say backers of the effort say they have so far secured a dozen resolutions from professional associations and civic organizations asking the East-West Gateway Council of Governments to coordinate a plan that both puts population growth at the center of the regional agenda and recommends steps to reverse its stall. I'm very pessimistic about an opportunity to reverse this, but it was really a conversation that was in-depth at a dinner that I had with my next guest, Jeff Rainford, the former chief of staff for Mayor Slay, when we were out just a couple of months ago. Jeff, we were talking about this very issue in economic development, and I was left with a lot of questions and not a lot of answers, and I'm sure you saw the story from Monday. I mean, how can you be optimistic about turning some of this around?
Well, first of all, you know, I sort of take the approach, I'm neither optimistic nor pessimistic. You know, it's a necessity. We just have to do it. I mean, we have to try.
Well, I don't disagree with that.
I can't, you know, the people who are in charge of this can't promise anything, but I will say this. We are at a point in the region and are at a point in the city where little dinky half measures just aren't going to work. And we sort of have this habit in St. Louis. We love to study stuff, and we love to sort of take steps that and hold big news conferences with big announcements of nothing. I mean, we have to both get the fundamentals right, and the fundamentals are we have got to make St. Louis safe.
Right.
We have got to have better educational opportunities, especially in the city and in the inner suburbs. We've got to get tax policy right. The earnings tax and the state income tax are killing us. And we've got all these duplicated governments. When anybody would want to come to town and say, hey, I want to talk to whoever's in charge of St. Louis, if you're talking about the region, they don't know who to talk to. You can go to Greater St. Louis, but Greater St. Louis, you know, isn't the city and the county. You go to the county and the city's not involved. And so, you know, the days where maybe we'd be like, well, let's offer a bunch of internships to St. Louis kids so they stay in St. Louis. Those kind of half measures are not going to work anymore. I think we're going to have to when I say bold, that doesn't necessarily mean big. I mean, making downtown St. Louis safe should not be bold, but it is. But it's also not big. That's something that is achievable. You know, there are alternatives to the St. Louis public schools, charter schools and the like. You know, we got to finally get serious about tax policy. And, and the other thing about St. Louis and why it's not growing is we don't get our fair share of immigrants, and we can all argue over illegal immigrants, and we can all argue over criminals coming into the country, but there are other places that are getting legal, you know, a lot of legal immigrants, and they're growing that way. We kind of got a confluence of nothing. We're really not doing anything particularly well when it comes to growing.
So this is where the new mayor really has to step up and be a leader here. And I don't know where, because I'm not criticizing her. She's dealing with tornado damage and all these other things. But where is that going to come from? And how do you actually, can't flip a switch, right? One of the things I found interesting in the story is they said, and this surprised me, they said a lot of the interest interest in this issue is coming from St. Charles County businesses and governments, because the quote was, their growth has now slowed to a trickle. They see it coming. They want to do something about it. But in the city, you know, one of the issues to address, and we talk about this even on the roundtable, Jeff, is why should persons in St. Charles County or in Baldwin or in Fenton, where I live, why should they care about the population dwindling in the city of St. Louis? Why does that matter? We don't care.
Right. So there's two problems here. Number one is a lot of our reputation nationally comes from what happens in the city. And a lot of that is very positive. We're the chess capital, you know, not only of the country, but maybe of the world. We have one of the great art museums. Our baseball team and our hockey team often, you know, are national sources of pride. We do have a lot of great things in the city of St. Louis, but we also, unfortunately, we have crime. You know, it seems like once a year we have just some heinous crime downtown that makes national news and just scares the bejesus out of people. And the other thing is that there are a few communities where the center is hollowed out, but the suburbs are so magnificent that the region is growing, but there aren't very many of them. But I will also say that while this city has certainly been on the wrong track, and that's bad for the region, the region's not killing it either.
Yeah.
You know, St. Charles's growth is largely at the expense of the city of St. Louis and St. Louis County. It's not like St. Charles has brought in 100,000 people from New York City or from Austin, Texas, or from Denver, Colorado.
True.
They're just getting people who are fed up with the city and the county. So the region's not killing it either. And I think everybody's got a role. You mentioned the mayor. Government's got to do what government does. So that's crime, that's schools, that's tax policy, that's getting rid of all of these multiplicative jurisdictions. It's doing crime together. There's a new crime training center, the regional crime training center that's coming together. And then the civic and business community and the labor community and folks like me, we have a role to play, too, which is probably involving, you know, the broader idea of what do we want to focus on as a region to grow? I don't think we should focus on 100 things. We could focus on being the coolest place to be a woman entrepreneur and try to get women to stay here and move here. Or we could be, it could be immigration, or it could be young people. It could be the fact that we have a really, really affordable cost of living
right
here. But
that's
people
true
also make a lot of money. I mean, you can get affordability in Jackson, Mississippi, but you also don't make much money. Here it's affordable and you can make money. So the government has to be bold. The business community has to demand certain things from the government, which means they're going to have to do things like say, I know it's not popular to put more cops downtown, but you got to put more cops downtown. It's an existential threat. And there are other things I think the business community can do as far as being focused. But I don't think little dinky things are going to work. I think we're going to have to be maybe not big, but we are going to have to be bold.
Yeah, and I don't see where that's going to come from. I'm not really going to criticize Kara here, because maybe Kara is capable of being bold. I do not see this current board of aldermen, and certainly Megan Green as the president, as someone who can lead us into the future. But let's talk about young people. You have a daughter who does not live here in St. Louis. I have two adult children who did not want to live in St. Louis. Now, my son in Houston, who's got the baby, my grandchild, he's concerned about the schools down there. He knows that he can get back here into the suburbs with, you know, good schools and an affordable cost of living. But his girlfriend has family down there. So it's very complicated. But how do you appeal to young people and make them want to stay in our region?
So the one thing is that naturally there are other places that have natural advantages. Like my daughter's in Denver. We just aren't going to ever have mountains. We are not going to have the outdoor activities they have. She just loves the you know, what she does when she's not working. You know, but, you know, there are places like Austin, Texas, and Nashville and other places, and places that have oceans and lakes and mountains, you know, they have advantages that we don't. It will take, if our strategy as a region, and again, the governments still have to do all those things I talked about. But if our strategy as a region is we're going to focus on making this the coolest place in America for young people, and then the first thing I think we probably ought to do is talk to young people. You shouldn't ask a 65-year-old former chief of staff, you know, how to make St. Louis cool for young people. But there are things that we can do if they were knitted together and focused and sold and marketed and that kind of thing, if that's what we chose to make the thing. And, you know, that takes leadership, too. And so, like, if we just decided one day we're going to make a St. Louis, which I think we actually have some things that if you couldn't afford to live in Denver because it's expensive, you can't afford to live in Silicon Valley or some of the other places because they're expensive, you know, we can get people to live here if we knit together all of the cool things that we have and we market it and we make that a thing. If you did that, along with us doing, you know, at least being competitive nationally and getting immigrants, that would actually, along with the government getting its part right, that would actually be a path forward where, you know, at least you could stem the loss, if not actually start, you know, having some growth.
Yeah, look, I love Missouri. I love St. Louis. I love the region. I don't plan on leaving. Maybe when I retire, I'd go out to the desert. But I'm very pessimistic about the future of growth. And, you know, we'll continue to talk about it. I appreciate you jumping on here this afternoon. I know you're going to be on the roundtable soon. We'll talk about it on the roundtable this week. But, man, I wish I could be more glass half full on this topic. I just don't see the leadership, Jeff.
Hey, Mark, so let me just say this about what you just said.
Quickly.
We always had to say in the mayor's office, don't let a good crisis go to waste. We're going to hit rock bottom at some point, and it's going to be bad. And when it does, we need to then use that as the way to get people to spur them to action.
Yep.
All right. Hey, Rainford, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Audio cut of the day is coming up. And you don't want to drop out of the top 10, but we were number one in that particular area. I think that's the reference there from the Mark Cox show this morning. All right. So CNN runs with this story last night with the headline, exclusive, early U.S. intel assessment suggests strikes on Iran did not destroy nuclear sites, sources say. And they go on to say the assessment, which has not been previously reported, was produced by the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Pentagon's intelligence arm. It is based on battle damage assessment conducted by U.S. Central Command in the aftermath of the strikes. Now, President Trump in the Netherlands here at meeting with NATO members did not take kindly to that at all today.
When I saw them starting to question the caliber of the attack, was it bad? Well, it was really bad. It was devastating. They were obliterated. Like, you can't get into the tunnels. There's no way you can even get down. The whole thing is collapsed in a disaster. And I think all of the nuclear stuff is down there because it's very hard to remove. And we did it very quickly. And they also knew we were coming. So I don't think too many people want to be down there knowing we're coming with the bunker busters, as we call them. We can't forget our submarine, which was out there. Submarines, actually. But submarine was out there. We shot 30 rockets into an area, every single one of them. I think it was almost 400 miles away, I think, Pete, right? 400? Every single one of them hit within 9 inches from where it was supposed to be. It took out a lot.
So you know what I did? I always play that audio cut of the day sounder. I forgot to do that
today. I wondered.
I rarely don't do that, but yeah. This serves as audio cut of the day. So he really got into it here with several members of the media, including Kelly O'Donnell at NBC News and Caitlin Collins from CNN.
Oh, fake news CNN? Here we go. Wait till you hear this question.
Thank you, sir.
You should really say how great our soldiers and our warriors are.
I think everyone appreciates our soldiers and our warriors. I do have two questions for you, Mr. President. You just cited Israeli intelligence on these attacks. Earlier, you said U.S. intelligence was inconclusive. Are you relying on Israeli intelligence for your assessment of the impact of the strikes?
No, this is also Iran made the statement. And it's also, if you read the document that was given, that Pete can talk about if you'd like, the document said it could be very severe damage, but they didn't take that. They said it could be limited or it could be very severe. They really didn't know, other than to say it could be limited or it could be very, very severe. And you didn't choose to put that because it was very early after. Since then, we've collected additional intelligence. We've also spoken to people who have seen the site. And the site is obliterated.
Yeah, let me tell you, that got a little hot and Trump was worked up. So was Pete Hegseth and Secretary of State Rubio. But again, CNN runs with their instinct in the New York Times saying, oh, this did not work as well as sold. I would be the first to admit that I want to see what the ROI is on this. But I do think it's a little too early. And the Israelis say it worked quite well. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.